We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run Finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, presented to you by your local Hyundai dealers. You're listening to Chicago's number one sports station. 670 The Score is Chicago Sports. Chicago Sports is The Score. An Odyssey station. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. The Score!
This hour is brought to you by Advent. If you have snoring, sleep apnea, or nasal breathing problems, go to adventnose.com to schedule your appointment.
It's awesome to be back at House Hall, and so we will be in our draft room taking advantage of all the technology that we have in there. We'll have 10 people in our draft room this year. We'll be spaced out. We'll be wearing our masks. We'll be doing all the right things. And then we'll have our scouting staff and our coaching staff here at House Hall during the 3 days of the draft in close proximity. Some of us are vaccinated, some of us aren't, so we're just kind of working through that. So we just got to be, you know, smart and cautious and careful as we go through it.
Bernstein and Rahimi, 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Well, first, get everybody vaccinated, and telling me you're going to be spaced out during the draft kind of has me a little bit nervous, because too many Bears drafts have had executives far too spaced out in general. Eric Edholm is the lead draft analyst for the NFL at Yahoo Sports. He is on Twitter at Eric_Edholm, and he joins us in the Twitch stream as well. So check us out, twitch.tv/Chicago670. The Score, here he is on the Alpamonte Nissan Hotline, Alpamonte Nissan on North Avenue in Melrose Park at apnissan.com. Hello, Eric. How are you?
I'm spread out. It's just me and the dog here at home, so no masks needed today.
So I saw that your final mock draft has been published, and I'm wondering, how do you approach it? What's your process as far as you're saying you think this team will take this person? How much is based on just looking at what they need, and how much is you actually working the phones, getting actionable intelligence from people you know around the league?
Yeah, and it's funny you say that, because I actually got a pretty decent tip about, 45 minutes after I published it. And it certainly didn't match up with what I had in there with one team's pick. So a lot of it is based on the chatter that I'm hearing from people around the league. And, you know, obviously the more you build relationships, the more comfortable you are reporting that information. And, the less sort of disinformation or misinformation you try to get, or at least you try to filter it out. But, yeah, for me, it's always, all right, let's just go pick by pick. I'm not going to pencil in number 19 before I do number 4, you know, and then go right down the line. I don't project trades. So for a team like the Bears, who potentially could move up, it's always going to be a little unsatisfying, because, you know, I just try to stick with the 32 picks we have now, go down the line, and at least project as best I can how these players are going to fit into the round, with, you know, knowing that there will be 3 or 4 guys who will go higher because of trades or lower because of other things that happen.
And that said, your latest mock draft has the Bears taking the Virginia Tech tackle Christian Darrisaw. I like the idea of the Bears taking an offensive lineman, especially at number 20. We've talked a lot about how strong the offensive line class is for this draft. What are your thoughts on where you see everybody going and how they shake out?
Yeah, I think there's kind of like two groups. You know, there's the group at the top that I think is pretty strong, even with some opt-outs and, you know, whatever questions exist with those. You know, Penei Sewell, Rashawn Slater from Northwestern, you know, Darrisaw, Tevin Jenkins. I love Ali Barrett-Tucker from USC a lot. I think he's a really good player who could try to be played at tackle. And the depth is really good, but I think there's a drop. You know, I think there's a tier up high with those guys. And then you get to the Alex Leatherwood, you know, Sam Cosmi from Texas, et cetera, you know, Liam Eichenberg from Notre Dame, a local kid. So, you know, I could understand that if the Bears do miss out or if they take another route, it's not like the offensive line class is gone after that point. They can feel comfortable with the idea of grabbing one in day two because there are a number, especially left tackles. There's a lot of left tackle potential in this year's class, you know, even as they come with a lot of questions about experience or injuries or those sorts of things.
Who is a guy that you like more than everybody else seems to?
Yeah, there's one that I have in mind. I've brought him up a couple times on different shows and platforms and stuff. It's Elijah Molden from Washington. He's a nickelback. You know, I mean, you can play him at safety. Maybe you could try him outside a corner. I think his best home is going to be inside. You know, I think of a guy like Vic Fangio and said, wow, he'd love this dude, right? I mean, this is exactly, you know, typecast, exactly the type of player you want. Not big, not especially fast, but plays with some juice and some energy. And for those watching on Twitch, you can see I'm wearing my All Juice team. Elijah Molden was a member of the All Juice team that we did this year to honor our late friend Therese Paylor. So he was one of the first guys that I said, he's got the effort, he's got the performance, he's got the attitude. That all fits. So I've got him, I think, number 38 or 9 overall. I don't think he's going anywhere near that high, but I'll stand alone on that one. I'm all right with it.
Justin Fields is a name that a lot of people are talking about right now, just given what he's announced with his medical condition, but also the rumors that were out about him beforehand. You released a profile of him earlier. I saw it on your Twitter feed. Tell us what you like about him and what you think might be underrated about him.
Yeah, it's a good question because there's so much debate around league circles and certainly with fans and media about where Fields is going to go and why isn't he higher on some teams' boards. And I get it. I mean, he's my number 4 overall player. He's not perfect. He probably needs some work in terms of speeding up his timing. I mean, really, it's about anticipating throws. You know, you always see those great quarterbacks like Aaron Rodgers throw the ball before the receiver is done making his break. And then as soon as they're out of the break, the ball is in their hands. That's the kind of timing I'm talking about. It's not really nitpicky because you see him a tick or two late a lot of times. Ohio State had a lot of wide open, you know, they had a great concept, great offensive design, a lot of wide open receivers, which he hit. I mean, his downfield accuracy to me is unassailable. And I think he was really, really good in that respect. But he sometimes will bail early too. You know, he won't get all the way through his progression. He'll turn into a runner. That's great on the college level, but I think in the pros, you know, he is not such a dynamic athlete, you know, Lamar Jackson's speed or Cam Newton's size to where you can say, okay, he can get away with that a little bit. So some of this is a little bit nitpicky. As for the epilepsy stuff, which has been reported, I've talked to two different, you know, I've gotten word from two different team doctors that say it's not a concern for them, you know. Epilepsy can be managed by medication. Some people grow out of it. There have been numerous players who've gone in the NFL with this as a concern. It never ended up being an issue. So as far as the list of worries, I think that one's about number 138 on the list. I really don't think it's going to end up affecting his draft stock.
How much nervousness do you hear from scouts and executives, evaluators, about how stale some of the film may be for guys who opted out, or how less useful it could be because the games were so weird and schedules were different and they just don't have the same reliability in their usual tools? I love it as a fan. I love the variance. I love the fact that they may create a little more boom or bust, or you may get some free agent walk in who all of a sudden says, holy crap, we didn't know how good this guy was. But it has to be it makes the guys who do it for a living a little bit unsettled.
Yeah, I think, you know, it may be a little less about how old the tape is. And although, you know, you'd love to see the more recent tape, the better, right? But number one, it's the amount of tape, you know, for a guy like Penei Sewell or, you know, Rashawn Slater played 3 years. So you have plenty to look at. You know, that's not really as much of a concern. But, you know, Caleb Farley, 2 years. Penei Sewell, one plus year. He was injured half the year. Ja'Marr Chase, 1+ year. I guess you'd say almost 2 years. So, yeah, that's one big concern. The biggest thing that I've sort of determined in talking to GMs and assistant GMs and other scouting people is that the medical information right now has been very scarce, you know. And I was actually just texting with one this morning and that they were, you know, sort of hung up in their medical meetings longer than they expected, you know, in the sense that you know, there was no central combine this year. They had the medical recheck. You know, not every player was able to attend. And some of the late arriving information is met with a little more scrutiny or you know, just questioning how much they can trust it all. So that's been the biggest effect, I think, on this draft. But the smaller sample size can't be overlooked, whether it's a guy, you know, missing his final year or just only having that 1 year of production or tape.
You also have Trey Lance going in the top 10. Tell me what you think about his fit.
I mean, it really is a unique evaluation in the sense that I don't think we've ever had a 17-game starter from a FCS school, a highly successful one that competes, you know, as well as some FBS schools. But, you know, one game last season, he's not even 21 years old yet. There's so much to like about him. There's intelligence, there's maturity, there's arm talent galore. He might have the strongest arm in this class. Like, if you made that argument, you know, I wouldn't fight you on that one. I could absolutely see it. And yet, you know, there's still some young stuff that you see on tape. He'll try to force some balls. He'll chunk some easy throws where you think, oh, boy, that's a layup in the NFL. You can't be missing that one. But he does plenty to excite you and make you wonder, what could he be in 2-3 years? Where was he going to land? How will he be cultivated and marinated? And, you know, does the team have the right plan for him? I mean, that's the biggest thing is that I would feel pretty nervous about putting him out there week one as a starter. If you want to give him some reps in a package and let him run a little bit, he can do it. I just worry that he'll either be rushed into the lineup too quickly or that he'll be held back too long. And there's a fine line there. That's really the key. So, you know, Denver does make some sense to me at 9. There are other teams that I think are really curious about him and interested. They just have to really kind of be careful about what their expectations for 2021 are going to be.
We're talking with Eric Edholm of Yahoo Sports on the Bernstein and Rahimi Show, Mondays 9 to noon here on Sports Radio 670 The Score. I like to look at larger trends, and I like to see if some of my thoughts on this over time get validated. One of the larger trends in any draft, whether it's NFL or NBA, is that everybody's named Jalen. That's the one thing I know for sure, especially in NBA, but NFL too, that when in doubt, this whole generation of athletes, everybody in sports is going to be named Jalen. And that I don't know how it happened, why it happened, or whether Jalen Rose is the Jalen that spawned this, or why parents started doing it. That's one thing I noticed that's happening. The other, apropos of nothing else, the other is that we're not reading, especially in quarterback scouting reports, it used to be this big move to go to a quote-unquote pro offense. Can he recognize this? Can he do that? Is he ready to make that move? And you know what? I don't hear as much of that because I think the cross-pollination now has so accelerated that they're talking about quarterbacks differently. It doesn't seem like there's this threshold now of, well, can he do it the way we do it? Because the game has changed in both directions.
No doubt about it. I think there was certainly a time, even when I was covering the league, where it was taboo to, you know, include college gimmicky stuff. That's how it was always painted, you know. Oh, the much reviled screen game and the bubble screen. Ooh, who could you ever do that, right? Yeah, well, I think people got smart and realized that using space is a pretty good thing. A little different game in the college than it is the NFL, right? The hash marks are different and all that. But, you know, still, obviously a lot of those concepts have flooded the NFL. You see them in virtually every NFL offense now, RPOs and things like that, even the read option, right? So, it's funny that we are entering an era in which Mac Jones is an outlier, right? Justin Fields, Trevor Lawrence, you know, Lance, et cetera, Zach Wilson, they all have this great escapability, athletic ability. They can be design runners. They can throw on the move, et cetera, et cetera. Whereas Mac Jones, we kind of know what he is. He's the old school type of quarterback, you know, with a few little adjustments and that sort of thing. And yet, who won the Super Bowl? Tom Brady. Who won the national championship? Mac Jones. You know, there's still kind of a last vestige for the pocket quarterback that's sort of hanging on to dear life a little bit. And they'll always be there, right? You just have to decide what kind of offense do we want to be, and does this quarterback fit our offense? And if not, how do we adjust, or can we adjust? Can we make these little switches and take pages out, add pages to the playbook? So, yeah, it really has been a sea change in that regard, but I'll be curious to see how future pocket passes are treated, especially if Mac isn't the savior at three. If he ends up failing, what effect does that have?
Do we need the Wonderlic?
Yeah, that's right. My editor said, did they even have the Wonderlic this year? And I said, that's a great question. I don't know. I haven't heard anything about it. So it kind of set me down the path of writing a story to that end. And what I learned was that because we didn't have a combine, that's typically where the test is administered. And so I believe, unless there are some real eager beavers out there who wanted to take it on their own, the only place that prospects in this year's class took it was at the medical recheck, which is, you know, maybe 100 players, or I don't know what the total number is, but it's not the 345 that attend the combine. So we haven't had Wonderlic score leaks this year that I'm aware of. I don't know, unless I've missed them. I don't think we've lost out on anything. I think we've seen historically that, oh, you know, Jim Kelly had a 13 and Blaine Gabbert had a 42. Well, yes, one could play quarterback and one's just sort of a dude. So, you know, it really limits the scope of what you can decide. And the more I talk to evaluators, everybody kind of said, well, it's a data point. You know, it's one reference point that we can look at. It's nothing that ever makes a decision for us. It's really never been even a tiebreaker, but it's there for us. I mean, that to me, especially after this draft cycle, suggests this thing could go the way of the dodo bird. Now, it wouldn't totally stun me at all.
How wrapped up are you in the success or failure of a mock draft to adequately anticipate the picks? Do you sit there with, you know, and say, oh, I missed that one by one, I missed that one by two, or I got that one on the nose? How do you grade yourself, and how important is it to your self-worth?
Yeah, I always say, oh, you know, I don't care about that stuff, right? I'm here to deliver some good news and accurate scouting reports and, you know, breaking news and things like that. But as soon as we get to this point, now that's when the competitive juices start flowing, because I did pretty well last year. It was the first year in a couple of years where I ranked pretty highly on those mock draft rankings. And so it's almost like you feel like you're just sort of defending your honor or your title or whatever you want to say. So I know I'm going to miss one. Remember that little bit of information I told you about early on in the hit? I'm still thinking about that pick, and can I go in and change it without my editors noticing? And the answer is no. But, yeah, it creeps up on me, and then all of a sudden I think, boy, I really am insecure about this stuff. I don't know why I am, but I am.
What if you did a last version? Would that fix it?
Like a postscript, like an addendum or whatever. Yeah, if I could just say, look, and then I have two options, right? If I'm good on the first one, I can scrub the second one. If the second one hits better, or delete the other one. I think you're onto something here.
There it is. Or just call it fake and just say that what you say. Just gaslight everybody. You could do that too, because that's in style. Eric Edholm, good luck. Thank you.
Enjoy the draft.
Thanks, Eric.
We will. That is Eric Edholm of Yahoo Sports. There's some unresolved baseball issues that I think we need to address, and it's still regarding everything we started the show with and the issues with Tony La Russa. And I think we need to be practical about it. What do we do now? If we know for sure he's in over his head, and I think we do. We've had enough games. We have, 22 games right now, and he's already admittedly cost two, and maybe more from what we don't know about. We already have players trying to make excuses for him. We have a starter saying he was gassed. We have all that manifest evidence right in front of us. I think we need to talk about how we handle this now. Like, how do we make sure that we minimize his drag on this team? Is that fair to say?
It is. You brought up the drag, and it makes me think of the car version of a spoiler, which is not exactly the case here, because that would be anti-spoil. But
it's more like the drogue chute that for the drag racer pulls. I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, he's an issue. The fact that your manager is overmatched and the game's happening too fast for him, or he's not following what's going on. This is exactly the problem we thought we'd have, and we clearly have it. We got to figure out what to do about it.
We do.
All right, so let's next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Yeah, you know, Lucas just said he felt like he was didn't have much left in the tank that inning. Was there any indicators of that from your view, or anything you were trying to you were noticing in him as that inning went on?
Is that what he said?
Yeah, he said I didn't have much left in the tank. I asked him about the seventh.
outcome. And that's my fault for not recognizing it, because I looked at it, you know, he got walked the leadoff guy, which was, like, wasn't good, and he gets two outs. At that point, like I said, I was confident he'd get the third out and not take responsibility.
Yeah, this is not good, and we got to figure out what to do about it. Bernstein and Rahimi with you on the Score. This is the last paragraph of the piece that just posted at The Athletic from James Feegan. He said, this is La Russa's arena, where his Hall of Fame resume has been built and where he's expected to add value to the club in the long run. It's certainly not front office decrees pushing the White Sox to ride Giolito deep into triple-digit pitch counts. Through 22 games marked prominently by Matt Foster's nightmarish sixth inning in Seattle and Giolito's harrowing last two starts, the pitching changes are, at best, still being calibrated for how to get the best out of everyone. The lineup decisions, at least Tuesday night, had the last scoring chance ending with light-hitting utility men Billy Hamilton and Leury Garcia striking out to strand two runners while younger power hitters Zach Collins and Andrew Vaughn remained on the bench. The White Sox are a winning team. They are favored to make the playoffs this season, but what they lack is normalcy. This is already how we're writing and talking about the Chicago White Sox under Tony La Russa. So, in all seriousness, what do you do now?
So, A, credit to James Feegan and a lot of people speaking out about this, because there's not enough media voices in on this, I think. And Spieg's also tweeting earlier today, so I know his show's going to be fire later, and I know Lawrence will be too. But this is something that we have tracked for a reason. And yeah, Giolito's last start, which we actually discussed, because it was that early game in Boston that sneaked by everybody that started at 10 a.m., it was easy to forget when you think about the fact that it was his last one too, and how he labored through a 40-plus pitch inning and then came out there for the second, and that was questionable, to say the absolute least. His health is of ultimate concern to me. And for all the care you're taking of Michael Kopech, have the same respect for a guy like Lucas Giolito, who's your ace. Not everybody's Lance Lynn.
So look, here's a fact. La Russa's not going anywhere. There's no way Jerry Reinsdorf is allowing anybody underneath him to step in here and say, it's enough, this didn't work, we need to figure this out. That's not happening. So what can you do? Because La Russa doesn't have to care. Because he doesn't have to change anything. There's no standard set here. There isn't any consequence for anything. He knows he's set because the owner wants him there. The owner was the only guy that wanted him there, and it doesn't matter what he does. So there's that truth. What you're going to have to do is build up the support systems, put processes in place. Maybe you go to him and you say, Tony, how many press conferences, how many times after a game do you want to have to say, I should have known that, or that's my fault? You know, at some point, it's got to be embarrassing enough for him that you say, look, have somebody talk to you, make it okay, discuss these things openly, and say, let Ethan Katz tell you that Lucas Giolito is tired. Let Miguel Cairo, let Jerry Nairn expand the responsibility of some of these guys. Don't let this kind of thing happen again. I don't know who's in charge of doing this, whether this is Rick, whether it's Kenny, whether it's Jerry. Jerry can't like it. He wants his team to win. Like, someone in that building figure out how to make put support systems in place so that Tony La Russa isn't costing you opportunities to win games.
How do you do that with a guy who is the, I worry about it, because this is the man that you hired because he's the Hall of Famer and he's the one who's got three rings and he's the one who wanted to come back and fix the problem that happened when Hawk fired him. And I just don't know how do you teach a man of his accomplishment and stature and, yes, age, new tricks? I just can't see that shaking out to be a process that works.
Well, how do you La Russa proof your team without even worrying about him then?
Did you agree to any of that when you hired him, knowing even after the public relations nightmare that occurred later that you just have to accept the fates? My main concern is sincerely player health.
That's a concern, but wins and losses are important too. I mean, I hate this. I hate that we have to do this. I hate it. But it's sort of like when you, at least when Bobby Bowden was the nominal head coach of Florida State, he'd be in the tower and he'd have a headset that wasn't connected to anything. And you had people who were actually doing the work. And we speculated that some of this could be the case. And if Jerry Reinsdorf wants to say, hey, I rehired him as the manager, and they can win the World Series, and he can hold the trophy, and they can parade down the street, but disconnect his headset. You know, put somebody else in, and you know, someone can send him out there and say, Tony, you know, go make a pitching change here. But these fail-safes have to be in place. It's still April. How many press conferences does he want when he has people saying, and we could play, I don't know, Bruce said something to the effect of like, I hate this part of my job. When I never hated that part of my job. I always thought it was just that was my job, to ask difficult questions when a manager screws up. And a manager, that's a 76-year-old man who has to understand if he screwed up, he screwed up. And I thought that was always a very interesting part of my job, where I learned a lot about the sport. Asking Phil Jackson why he screwed up, or asking Dave Wannstedt why he screwed up, or asking Tim Floyd why he screwed up. You know, that's the job. But how many times does La Russa want to face that? Because there's more coming.
Billy Donovan, by the way, who also will tell you why things aren't working. But you also bring up the idea of his image to the public. And is that the image that you want a Hall of Famer leaving people with? Kind of like when we see an athlete who's not Tom Brady go to another team and he's past his prime. This is not what anybody wants to know him as either. And it shows how the game has changed. And you bring up velocity all the time, and there is no better example than how you manage a starting pitcher and how you manage a bullpen now. You can't do this to people. You just can't. I care about wins and losses as much as the next person. But if there's a point to make, at least to the guy who's in charge of working with the athletes he sees every day, it is also that of health. That's the one thing that I would probably bring up in a discussion. But why haven't we heard more from Ethan Katz?
I don't know. Look, Dusty Baker figured it out. Even Dusty Baker, even the guy who's, you know, riding his pitchers and, you know, the young guys and their horses, even he learned. He learned that you can't do what you used to do. The game has changed markedly.
It has changed. And for everybody who hates on us for talking about his age, show us where it's not a problem. Show us where his mismanagement of being out of the game for 10 years, I don't care who you are at that point, is a problem. Because we're seeing it right now. And to the texter who said, does it hurt more because A.J. Hinch is on the other side in this one? Yeah, because he managed a team who committed 5 errors and is one of the worst in baseball last night and still beat the team that's got the better lineup.
Yeah, you're damn right it does. I think about it all the time. Let's grab a phone call
like,
here.
Also, it's real cool when your lineup is sitting on the bench, Andrew Vaughn, Zach Collins, and runners in scoring position. They could probably help you there, couldn't they?
Here is Jim in Beecher on the score. Hi, Jim.
Hey, good morning, Layla. Good morning, Dan. One thing about this discussion that maybe we shouldn't totally discount at this point is La Russa just might realize himself that, you know what, maybe I don't have what I had 20 years ago, and maybe, hypothetically, in June, he resigns. Reinsdorf will not fire him. We know that. I agree with you 100%. But he may resign and take care of the problem right then and there.
I don't know why he would. He wanted
it's a possibility. Don't totally discount it.
I don't know why. I don't have any reason to believe it would happen. I don't know what would motivate him to do that unless he's got a health issue.
And here's the problem is I think that this all makes sense and it's a reasonable suggestion. But if there was a time to do that, it was before the season after the DUI charge.
Right.
Nobody wants to be here talking about this. It would be great if Tony La Russa was hired to have the acumen that we know him to have and that these decisions weren't being made and the White Sox were winning more games. But that's not what's happening here.
No, they got to figure out practically what to do to make sure these games don't keep happening, period. However you got to do it.
I am shocked when I saw Lucas Giolito. Even here's the thing is it aired last night in a way where you heard from on the postgame show on NBC Sports Chicago, you heard from Tony La Russa first, then you heard from Lucas Giolito. And that's traditionally how the rundown works in a postgame show. And I was shocked when I heard the back and forth and I heard them say Lucas said he didn't have anything left in the tank, or that Lucas said he was gassed. For Lucas Giolito to say that, I am still taken aback today.
You should be. That's the only appropriate response. It's too bad. And like you said, it's no fun. It's no fun. But we had a feeling that this was going to be the situation. I just didn't know that it was going to be in April when this was upon us. When we come back, I'm going to play a quick game that it's called Can You Watch It? It's next on The Score.
Being in better rhythm, what did you feel like went wrong for you in the seventh inning?
I didn't have much left in the tank.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show on your ride home. Afternoons 2 to 6 on The Score.
There should be a disclaimer. You know, do not do this. Keep out of reach of children. All that sort of stuff. Ryan Pace speaking has a negative effect on Chicago's mental health. Hypertension goes up, blood pressure goes up, heart rate goes up when Ryan Pace speaks.
Danny Parkins, Matt Spiegel, afternoons 2 to 6 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score, an Odyssey station.
This segment is brought to you by ShopYourBank.com.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Bernstein and Rahimi on The Score. You have us middays, 9 to noon, Monday through Friday. So before the show, Jay was asking if we saw the Adam Boqvist broken wrist. And I said, no, and I'm not interested. And then you guys started talking about a UFC fight. And then I started, and no, the answer is no to the question, can you watch it?
Oh, man. Yeah, Jay, you have to describe how you viewed Boqvist's injury last night.
Well, it didn't look like much because it was just a check, but then he got up and his wrist was dangling and his arm was 6 inches too long. And you didn't see the moment where it snapped, but you could tell as soon as he got up, you could see the glove and the wrist is sort of dangling there. And like, yep, that's a season injury. He's done.
I hate thinking about it, all of them, and you know, Robin Ventura or Kevin Ware, or just I can't. I don't want to. I have no curiosity in that regard. If I accidentally see something, I accidentally see it, but I go out of my way to not.
Chris Weidman's injury in the UFC fight was bad. Like it was Kevin Ware like. But the only way I can be okay with watching it is knowing what happened structurally. And the same thing was the suspect of what happened with Kevin Ware, where there was a pre-existing stress fracture, and it just
matter.
Hit in the perfect spot.
So what? It's still gross to see that. I don't get any sort of mitigation from revulsion because there was a pre-existing stress fracture.
But you know me, I'm also the person who like decided I was going to face my fear and like watch needles go into my arm on vaccinations and stuff, blood draws and whatnot.
Yeah, that's different than like bones breaking and stuff. Yuck. I don't even like it when it's fake, you know, in movies and stuff. My level of tolerance for that has gone way down as I've gotten older and maybe just recognized human frailty and mortality. It has to have something to do with it. I don't know, but just no. The answer is from here and after. Did I see it? Very likely not. Will I see it? No. Can I watch
309 it? Texts. No. Dak was an accidental watch. Dak Prescott, not again. Oh, Joe Theismann's always the classic one that people think of.
I don't want to talk about this anymore. I want to.
You're wearing your shoulders on your ears right now.
I know. So... I just am feeling all weird. I'm getting like a fight or flight response or something. Let's do transition with Lawrence Holmes because he's got Stoney coming up at the top of the hour. He's next on The Score.
In a moment, we'll look at the courageous Korean gymnast, Kim Hwan, who made a perfect dismount on what was later revealed to be a broken leg. Ouch.
It's the biggest thing to happen in the NFL since the Super Bowl. It's the 2021 NFL Draft. And the score is covering all the excitement. The Bears pick at 20. Who should they take? Or should they trade the pick to move up or down? Listen to our draft experts all week on Sports Radio 670 The Score. Chicago's home for Bears fans. An Odyssey Station. Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios. Presented to you by your local Hyundai dealers. You're listening to Chicago's number one sports station. 670 The Score is Chicago Sports. Chicago Sports is The Score. An Odyssey Station. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. The Score! What direction will Ryan Pace go with the 20th pick? Will they trade up or will they trade up? Or will they trade up? Or will they trade up? Will they trade up?
No. Jordan keeps torturing us with that. Thank you to everybody who is a part of this show today. We thank Mike Florio and Eric Edholm for joining us. Thanks to all the participants in Who's Your Guy. We're going to do two segments, 10 o'clock and 10:20 tomorrow. So we're going to knock out a bunch more names from our scouting list. Thanks to Connor O'Donnell and Brian Gertz, Jay Zawoski, and the aforementioned Jordan Malley. Transition is brought to you by CarX Tire and Auto. He's got Steve Stone coming up in just a few minutes, but here is Lawrence Holmes. Hello.
Hey! Hey, y'all.
Yo.
Baseball, right? Right? Am I right?
Baseball.
Ooh, yeah.
It's not great, Chicago. It's not great.
What do you think your conversation with Stoney is going to be like?
Well, I've got all sorts of questions for Steve today, and I'm looking forward to his expert, dispassionate eye. Like, I know that he cares about White Sox baseball, but he has a longer view on things, so I'm looking forward to hearing what he says. Like, I thought that there was a lot that was problematic in the game. There's an energy around the White Sox, even with their four-game win streak, that isn't there, and some of that is some of your parts aren't there. Like, some of the things that keep people engaged, like not having Aloy there, like not having Adam Engel, where you had to put out an outfield last night. And the alignment of that outfield, I thought, was questionable, because if you're going to play Billy Hamilton, never mind. I don't want to go down that road. I just know that you had guys that didn't drive in runs. Like, we can't take it off of the players and what happened. They gave you five errors. You had runners in scoring position. You didn't knock them in. That's a player issue. There was also a managerial or a couple of managerial issues. And Layla, I'm with you. The fact that Lucas Giolito gave voice to, yeah, I was out of gas, is concerning. Not because shocking. He was out of gas, but because he felt comfortable saying that publicly. And I've got two issues with that from a dugout standpoint. One, isn't Ethan Katz supposed to know? Like, if this is part of the reason that he was brought in, because he knows him so well, isn't he supposed to know that? Two, isn't the guy who reinvented bullpens and is a Hall of Fame baseball person, isn't he supposed to know that? Because Ozzy, on the postgame show, gave you Lucas's tell. He said, when you see him looking frustrated and kind of moving around outside of the mound, you know that he's probably done for the day. And the fact that no one on the White Sox staff knew or did anything about that is concerning.
That's to me the processes, Lawrence. Maybe the guy that the game's completely passed him by, or he's not paying attention, or he's just pickled. We'll figure out what to do now. What are you going to do? If he's going to be your manager, how do you make sure that this doesn't happen again? How do you make sure your pitching coach or your bench coach or anybody else is empowered to grab him by the shoulders and steer him in the right direction and say, go take him out now? Like, you have to fix this. This is an imperative now, because something's clearly wrong.
Yes, and I'm not sure that Tony got the situation right when he was talking about it in post.
He didn't.
Because there was one out, not two. And
yes.
Like, those are things that you don't want to hear from your manager, like that the manager is not 100% fully engaged or aware. And I wish that the White Sox would take this is kind of an NFL tactic of someone in your PR department saying, Tony, this is what you're going to be asked about. Like, and you don't have to, like, you don't have to put Tony at the podium like right away. You can be like, hey, Lucas said this. You're probably going to get asked about that. So for me, there was a fundamental like breakdown of the White Sox as an organization last night. And I plan to talk about that with Steve Stone and with White Sox fans. So thank you both. I will talk to you both tomorrow.
See ya.
Thanks, Lawrence.
That is Dan Bernstein and Layla Rahimi.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.